Welcome to the last month at the Federal Circuit, a look at recent Federal Circuit decisions impacting the intellectual property community. In this special episode, Finnegan attorneys Dan Kladowski and Kara Regan dig into statistics about the Federal Circuit's caseload and offer takeaways about what they mean.
So Dan, can you tell us about some of the statistics you plan to cover today?
Yes. So Finnegan has been tracking and reporting numerous statistics from the PTAB for nearly a decade, and I've been leading Finnegan's statistics team throughout that time. We track both final written decisions from the PTAB, outcomes of final written decisions, as well as the outcomes of appeals to the Federal Circuit. And we regularly publish our findings to Finnegan's at the PTAB blog. Now today, we're discussing trends that we've seen over time at the Federal Circuit, specifically regarding appeals from PTAB post-grant proceedings. And following this podcast, we plan to publish an article with new charts and statistics covering these trends that we'll discuss on today's podcast. Kara, you also plan to discuss some other statistics today, right?
That's right. So I'm planning to highlight some of the statistics that are not Finnegan specific, but are instead published directly by the Federal Circuit. The court posts its statistics both monthly and annually, and you can find them on the court's website under the court and further under reports and statistics. And so they do their annual statistics at the end of September for the prior fiscal year. And the court publishes a lot of data, but we're going to talk today mostly about the court's caseload and the timing of its dispositions.
And so what can you tell us today about the total caseload of the Federal Circuit?
Sure. And so if we look at the court's annual statistics and their caseload overall chart, we can see that the court's overall caseload is actually up slightly in fiscal year 2023. It moved up from about 1,500 cases from 1,400 cases the prior year. That's been pretty consistent since about 2018. Over time, we're seeing an average of about 1,500 cases a year in that period, swinging kind of plus or minus 80 in that time frame. It had been higher prior to that as IPRs really got started and the PTAB appeals started to peak. But consistently over time, it's hovered about this 1,500 mark, which is what we're seeing now. And if we look at February's caseload specifically, we can see that there's about 1,600 cases pending at that time at the Federal Circuit. So again, close to the average, perhaps a little high right now. If we're looking at the months so far this year, it may suggest that overall filings are up so far for the beginning of fiscal year 2024, but we don't have all of that data quite yet. Both the annual and the monthly data, though, provide information not only on the number of total cases, but about the breakdown of the court's caseload. And we can see that the USPTO, and particularly the PTAB cases that your stats cover, Dan, have been a major part of the court's caseload, really since the AIA was instituted. Since 2016, there have been approximately 200 more PTAB cases than district court appeals. And that's held true in fiscal year 2023. Interestingly, fiscal year 2023 also saw a spike in MSPB cases, the Merit Systems Protection Board, which is likely a result of the fact that that body now has a quorum and can move cases on to appeal. For several years, they didn't have that statutory authority. But in general, February is pretty consistent with what we would expect. USPTO cases are a very high percentage, about 42% of the total caseload. And it's worth noting that there's a little bit of a different categorization between the annual and the monthly data, so there's a bit of a discrepancy in how cases are categorized, but it's very fair to say that the IP cases are a majority of the court's docket, about two-thirds of the February workload. And Dan, having talked about how important the patent cases and the PTAB particularly is to the court's workload, what can you tell us about the outcomes of those appeals up to this point?
So between 2015 and 2023, there have been over 1,200 Federal Circuit opinions issued for post-grant appeals. And just to clarify terminology, when I refer to post-grant appeals, I'm referring to IPRs, or inter-parties review, CBMs, which are covered business method reviews, and PGRs, which are called post-grant reviews. That is the universe of what we're discussing today. We're not including appeals from prosecution, whether it's a patent application or a trademark application. The Federal Circuit gets those appeals as well, but we are just focused on patent post-grant proceedings coming up from the PTAB. And within those PTAB appeals, there are four different categories of ways that we've divided up these outcomes based on the decisions that we've seen. When the Federal Circuit issues an opinion, it can issue its outcome in a variety of different ways, but we've broken them down into four categories. The first category is an appeal where every issue on appeal has been affirmed. The second category is where every issue on appeal has been reversed or vacated. The third category is a mixed outcome, which means that at least one issue has been affirmed, but other issues on appeal have been reversed or vacated and remanded. And the fourth category is a dismissal on the merits. We see a lot of dismissals that happen because of a settlement, and that's not what we're counting here. We don't count those in our statistics. We're looking for decisions on the merits where an appeal was dismissed for a substantive reason, such as the Federal Circuit determining that it doesn't have jurisdiction to hear an appeal, which happened a lot around the 2015-2016 timeframe when the Federal Circuit had to grapple with whether it had jurisdiction over appeals from institution decisions at the PTAB. But generally speaking, those four categories are how we've divided up the outcomes of PTAB appeals.
That makes sense. Now knowing that we're tracking over four categories, what do the numbers look like for each of those categories? What percentage of PTAB appeals fall into each bucket?
So for any practitioners who are in front of the Federal Circuit regularly, this will come as no surprise, but about 74% or about 3/4 of appeals have resulted in every issue being affirmed. About 12.5% resulted in every issue being reversed or vacated. 10% of the appeals resulted in a mixed outcome, which, as I said before, means that some issues were affirmed and some issues were not. And about 3% of appeals have resulted in a dismissal on the merits. So again, it's largely skewed towards affirmances, but there are a noteworthy number of appeals that have resulted in reversals or the decision being vacated and remanded back to the board.
And, you know, you mentioned 74% of these are every issue affirmed. You, of course, know, Dan, the Federal Circuit has written opinions, and they do Rule 36 opinions, which are really just a summary affirmance. Do you track the breakdown of substantive opinions versus Rule 36s?
Yes, we do. So for background, the Federal Circuit, when Kara refers to a summary affirmance, that's Federal Circuit Rule 36, and that means that the Federal Circuit determines the opinion has no precedential value. And in those circumstances, the court has the discretion to issue just a single page opinion where the court affirms the board or the lower court without really giving any written explanation of the basis for the decision. Through the end of 2023, the Federal Circuit cumulatively from 2015 through 2023 issued Rule 36 affirmances in about 43% of all of its decisions. And it correspondingly issued written opinions with an explanation of the court's reasoning in about 57% of its opinions. But as we'll discuss shortly, those percentages are not static and they have changed significantly over time.
Well, it stacks up because in fiscal year 23, the PTO cases, which as Dan mentioned, is not just PTAB from the court, it's appeals from application denials, it's TTAB, other USPTO sources, we're at about an 8% reversal rate. And so there is some variation we see in these statistics over time. For instance, PTO in 2022 was about a 10% rate, but it's generally consistent with what Finnegan sees. And I think we'd expect those statistics to be pretty consistent since there are so many PTO cases in front of the court. An interesting aside on those, the ITC in fiscal year 2023 only had a 0% reversal rate, but the year before, it was 25%. There are very few ITC cases that make it up to appeal, though. And so as a result, one case can make a huge difference in outcomes. With the PTO, the numbers kind of smooth out over such a large body of data. And now, Dan, speaking of the numbers of things, you mentioned that there have been about 1,200 opinions in CAFC appeals from PTAB post-grant proceedings over the last 8 or so years. How's that varied over time?
So between 2015 and 2023, there have been about 140 decisions issued per year on average from the Federal Circuit, but that's varied pretty widely and it has not been consistent year over year. So there were only 47 appeals with opinions issued in 2015. The numbers rose pretty sharply in 2016 up to 108 opinions issued on appeal. The numbers then climbed over time up to a peak at 190 opinions that were issued in 2019. And since 2019, it's ebbed from there. Again, the average is about 140. It's tapered off. And in last year, in 2023, we had 150 opinions issued. So the volume of appeals coming out of the Federal Circuit are not as high over the past few years as they were in 2019, but the average has settled into about 140 to 150 opinions issued per year for PTAP post-grant appeals.
Got it. And you know, you say PTAP post-grant appeals. What's the breakdown between opinions from IPRs as opposed to, for instance, CBM or PGR proceedings?
It's been largely IPRs, which is consistent with what we've seen at the PTAB, where IPRs are by far the most popular type of proceeding by filing that's been filed at the PTAB. Starting in 2015, of the 47 total opinions that we had on appeal, 42 of the 47 were IPR appeals, and 5 of the 47 were CBM appeals. This trend of having more IPR appeals relative to CBMs and PGRs has continued throughout the time span from 2015 to 2023. Between 2015 and 2018, over 90% of the appeals were from IPRs, while the remainders were CBMs. But then starting in 2019, the number of CBM decisions began to taper off as the USPTO winded down the CBM program. It was discontinued in September of 2020, and we began to see appeals from PGRs replace CBMs. So that transition has gradually happened over time, and now it's settled into about 95% of PTAP appeals are from IPRs, with the remaining 5% being PGRs in 2023. There were no CBM appeals in 2023, which would suggest that CBM appeals are done. But I'll note that in January of this year, we've already seen 2 more CBM appeals, so they have not entirely gone away yet.
Yeah, but it sounds like we're close, and IPRs are by far the largest proportion of PTAP post-grant appeals that we're seeing. What can you tell us about how outcomes of those appeals have changed over time, Dan?
Well, the outcomes of IPR appeals have varied significantly over time, as you might expect. Starting in 2015, the Federal Circuit was affirming the PTAB on every issue in about 83% of IPR appeals. But the Federal Circuit had a relatively high number of dismissals also that year. About 7% of the opinions resulted in dismissals. And that was more than both the percentage of appeals from IPRs where every issue was reversed or vacated, which is 5%, as well as the number of IPR appeals that had a mixed outcome, which is another 5%. Those dismissals, as I mentioned before, was a relatively high number early on, I think largely because people were testing the boundaries of what they could appeal with respect to IPR institution decisions, where it was not fully fleshed out at that point in time what issues exactly could be appealed with respect to institution decisions. And the Federal Circuit had to take up a number of cases where it clarified that. Between 2015 and 2017, the affirmance rate then dropped significantly. From 2015 moving into 2017, the affirmance rate dropped 14% overall. And in 2017, only 69% of opinions resulted in every issue being affirmed. But then the affirmance rate largely stabilized and held steady in the low 70% from 2017 through 2022. And during this time, the Federal Circuit issued several opinions providing guidance to the PTAB on a variety of issues. So we had a relatively high percentage throughout this time of PTAB appeals being reversed and remanded. But that wasn't exactly the case in 2023.
I'm going to ask, so it sounds like things perhaps had started to stabilize, but did that hold true in 2023, Dan? What was the affirmance rate?
No, in 2023, we saw a sharp increase in the number of appeals where every issue was affirmed. And in fact, the numbers went back up to the levels that they were at in 2015. So in 2023, the affirmance rate went all the way back up to 83%, which means that 2023 as a year was relatively good for appellees and relatively bad for appellants. In the intervening years between 2015 and 2023 were, in contrast, slightly better for appellants.
Seems like it was a good year to be an appellee then for the most part, but are appellees receiving written opinions that they're having to review, or is it a Rule 36 summary affirmance that the court's been issuing? What are the trends like there?
So the number of Rule 36 affirmances, or the proportion of summary affirmances, is one of the more interesting trends that we've seen since we've been tracking the Federal Circuit statistics. Starting in 2015, the Federal Circuit issued Rule 36 summary affirmances over half the time. It was in about 55% of the cases where the parties were receiving a summary affirmance without any accompanying reasoning from the Federal Circuit. But considering that the Federal Circuit was also affirming every issue in about 83% of the cases overall that year, that underscores that a high proportion of those affirmances were issued as summary affirmances rather than a written opinion accompanying the affirmance. But that trend has generally decreased over time. From 2015 to 2017, the number of Rule 36 affirmances as a ratio of opinions dropped from 55% to 38%, which is a pretty sharp drop in the number of summary affirmances issued by the Federal Circuit. Then from 2017 to 2019, the summary affirmance rate increased by 10% again to end the year 2019 at 48%. So it dipped significantly from the high point in 2015 to a low point in 2017, and then it started to rise again. But from that point on, we've seen a general trend of the ratio of Rule 36 affirmances decreasing over time. From 2019 through 2023, it dropped over time, and it ended 2023 with a summary affirmance rate of just 40%. So over 9 years, while there were some ups and downs, the summary affirmance rate fell from 55% in 2015 to 40% in 2023. This general decrease in the ratio of Rule 36 affirmances is pretty interesting and noteworthy, given that the affirmance rates on appeal remained high and, in fact, went back up in 2023. Now, Kara, of course, a Rule 36 affirmance would take place shortly after the oral argument at the Federal Circuit, but what can you tell us about how long it takes the Federal Circuit to issue its opinions more generally?
Sure. So the court does publish those statistics about the time to disposition, and it's measuring the time from when an appeal is docketing through the termination. And so that's not including things like cross appeals or cases that settle before there's really a substantive filing of any kind. It's the docketing and appeal forward. And so overall, the median was 13 months over time. And in fiscal year 2023, that median is actually up slightly to 16.4, whereas in 2022, we were at the median at 13 months and only at 12 months in 2021. And so it's possible that there's a mathematical error. When I run the math on my end, I only get about 15 months just based on the court's own numbers. But regardless, we can see that the average has gone up in recent years, and it does seem that that's anecdotally what folks experience, that cases are taking a little bit longer to get to termination. It's also done by category, so we can see that although things like VA cases are particularly long to termination, and again, there are not that many of cases that are directly from the VA, which is what we're seeing there, and so it's possible that one very long lingering case is skewing those numbers. IP cases are also moving slightly slower than in the past, with district court cases taking an average of 16.1 months versus only 12 months in fiscal year 2022. ITC, 20.5 months versus 18 in fiscal year 2022, and 19 months for the USPTO in fiscal year 2023 versus only 15 in 2022. And those numbers hold for cases that are actively decided by the merits panels, as opposed to cases that are, for instance, settled, which would be encompassed in the first set of statistics, which at least suggests that where cases are settling, it's tending to happen a little bit later in the process, perhaps after briefing, and maybe closer in time to argument. So I think litigants can expect that they may be waiting a little longer for a decision, but it's worth noting that that's potentially not all stemming from the court. For many years, the court's been very generous with its policy for folks who need to reschedule oral argument because of conflicts, and that sometimes presented difficulty with getting a case heard. The court's recently issued guidance narrowing the exception for good faith conflicts that will push an oral argument. And so we may see that things begin to move a little bit more quickly as a result of that guidance. It's too early to say at this point. And so, Dan, what are the key takeaways that you've seen in Federal Circuit appeal trends?
So there are a few key takeaways. The first is that the Federal Circuit usually affirms on appeal. It may come as no surprise, but the cumulative affirmance rate, while it's varied over time, still averages out to about 74% of cases having all issues affirmed. And that number just in 2023 increased to 83% of cases where every issue on appeal was affirmed from the PTAB. The Rule 36 summary affirmance rate, however, has decreased over time consistently, which means that even if you have a high likelihood of having the PTAB's decision affirmed on appeal, you're now more likely to receive a written opinion explaining the Federal Circuit's reasoning than you would have been several years ago. The number of opinions on appeal has generally plateaued from its peak of about 190 in 2019 to now 150 opinions being issued per year. That was the number that we had in 2023. Most of those opinions, again, came from IPRs. About 5% of those opinions are from PGRs now, and a very small number, if any, are from CBMs. Kara, do you have any key takeaways from what you've seen in the court's own published statistics?
I think generally that we're going to be waiting a little bit longer for decisions on average, but if you show up to a oral argument day at the Federal Circuit, you're likely going to be hearing patent cases, and you're likely going to be hearing PTAB cases, and the statistics that Dan's been sharing are going to hold fast.
Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That concludes the discussion that we were planning to have today on trends at the Federal Circuit on appeals from the PTAB. If you'd like any more information about Finnegan's PTAB statistics, both from the tracking that it does for final written decision outcomes at the PTAB, as well as the appellate outcomes before the Federal Circuit, you can subscribe and visit the At the PTAB blog to get regular updates. And if you would like any more information about these statistics, or if you have any particular requests for information or stats that you would like to see in the future, please feel free to contact us directly. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dan Kladowski and Kara Regan of Finnegan, one of the largest IP law firms in the world. For more commentary on intellectual property news and issues, to listen to other podcasts, and to receive additional information on the firm, please visit www.finnegan.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Finnegan.